The other day I was asked the question about what was the purpose of worrying about the spirit realm when once you get into the spirit realm and are made a spirit, why, you live forever. Never can be destroyed. And in fact, the lady said, even Satan's going to live forever. She pointed out, if you want to turn there with me, in Genesis chapter 3 and verse... Probably ought to begin with verse 12. Here we have Adam actually trying to shove the blame of eating of the forbidden fruit to his wife. And in verse 12, Adam says, well, you gave me this woman, Eve, and she's the one who deceived me. She gave me the tree, and I ate it. And of course, then Yahweh turns to the woman and said, is it true? What have you done? And she said, well, it wasn't my fault, the serpent. He beguiled me. And I did eat of it. And then we read there in verse 14 that Yahweh Elohim said unto the serpent, because you have done this, you are cursed above all cattle, above every beast of the field. Upon the belly, thy belly shalt thou go, and dust shalt thou eat all the days of thy life. And in verse 15, we have the curse that is put upon upon Satan. But you'll notice here it says, I will put enmity between thee and the woman. And notice it says seed, singular, not seeds, plural. He put enmity between the seed and her seed, which is Yahshua, of course. So we have here the enmity and the hatred and so on. And it says that the seed shall bruise Satan's heel, and the seed shall bruise Satan's head. And it says, you shall bruise his heel. Now that word bruise is the error, of course. That word bruise is really not the correct word. It really has a deeper meaning than that. And it's number 2233. But it means to destroy. And yet people have read this, and so many people think that once you make it into the spirit realm, that there's no destruction and no one can do anything at all to stop someone who is in the spirit realm. And they think that Satan is going to live forever. But I want to do a little study on this, because basically it says there that the seed shall bruise Satan's head and he shall bruise the heel. So we find that this came to pass when Yahshua was put to death. He was bruised, he was beaten, he was attacked, and again, he's someday going to bring Satan to his own end. And that's what I want to take a look at here. If we can, turn to Romans, the 16th chapter, if you will. Here Paul is writing to the people at Rome, and in chapter 16, he mentions several different things, and the one we want to take a look at here, of course, deals with the one with Satan in chapter 16. Move on down there let's get into it right away, verse 20. And here, this is Paul's... He's signing off to the assembly there at Rome. And he says, and the mighty one of peace shall bruise Satan under your feet shortly. Now again, this word bruise is actually in the Greek suntribo. It's number 4937. Other places, it's translated differently. It's not bruise. In Matthew 5:4, it's broken. And in Matthew 14:3, it's break. Luke 4:18, it's broke. Brokenhearted. Luke 9, it's actually broke. John 19:36, it's translated broke. Revelation 2:27. So here's the point. Why does he say that? I mean, apparently the writers of the Bible must have picked up on the word over in Genesis 3, verse 15, and felt they could not use the word broken or to destroy, and therefore use the word bruise. But it's not really the correct word. And we'll get into a few more here in a minute. But the word santribu really means to crush utterly. It means to shatter completely. It means to make an end to. So what we see here is that Satan will actually someday be crushed utterly, be put to death, and will no more be able to harm the people. Let's go over to the book of Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 2. Here we have another an example here in chapter 2 of Hebrews. Notice here that it's talking here about Yahshua. In verse 12 it says, I will declare thy name unto the brethren. In the midst of the congregation will I sing praises unto you. And again, I will put my trust in him. And again, behold, and the children which Elohim hath given me. For as much then as the children are partakers of flesh and blood, he also, talking about Yahshua, took part of the same, that through death he might destroy him that had the power of the death, power of death, and that is the devil. So here we have a direct statement here that Satan is going to be destroyed. And that word, again, it's katargio, and it means to destroy utterly. And then he goes on in verse 15 and says, and deliver them who through fear of death were all their lifetime subject to bondage. And he goes on to say what Yahshua did, took upon the form of human beings and became actually like one of the brethren. And that in verse 17, he might be a merciful and faithful high priest because he understands the thing we're going through. And he is to make reconciliation for the sins through the work that he did. Let's go over to another one and take a look at one more. We have to have more than one witness, don't we? Can't just take one or two. Let's go over to the book of Thessalonians, 2 Thessalonians. Here Paul is writing to the assembly there in Thessalonica. In chapter 2, he is talking here in 2 Thessalonians about the end of the age, about the coming of, and gathering together of Yahweh's people and gathering unto Yahshua. And in verse 2, he says, be not soon shaken in mind. Don't be all troubled and don't be overly concerned, knowing that if you've done the right thing, that we are telling you about what's going to happen. But again, all the way through the warnings of the coming end of the age, you'll notice that the word deception or deceive crops up all the time. Verse 3 says, let no man deceive you by any means. For that day shall not come except there come, should be the falling away first. And most people say, well, that's already happened, hasn't it? We've already found that the Bible is not being taught in its truth. It's not being taught in the way we should understand it. There are a lot of things that we find are not really in the Scriptures. And so the truth is really a little difficult to come by. But actually, there's ahead of us yet. The great falling away. It's the falling away when the man of sin is to be revealed, the son of perdition. And it's going to be a greater falling away at that time than anything that has happened before. And this is what the Bible is talking about. And that is why Yahweh wants us to make sure that our faithfulness, our trust in him, and our understanding of his word is deep and abiding. It isn't something someone can shake loose from us. We're going to stand by it no matter what happens, knowing that the Bible is true and that Yahweh answers our prayer. So he says that the man of sin should be revealed, the son of perdition. And notice he is the one who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called Elohim or that is worshipped. That isn't to say he's going to take the things that Yahweh has in his word and say they are wrong. He'll probably try to get everyone to believe that he is the returned Messiah, that he is the one that we ought to be following. And he will change things and bring all things under his control. And actually, when he sits in the temple of Elohim, you notice how quickly that follows verse 3. Because once he sits or tries to sit in the temple, whatever it might be, of Elohim over in the Middle East, is when the true believers will reject him and say that he is not the true Messiah. He's an imposter. And that is when he turns on the people in the middle of the 7 years. And that's why you read about the 3.5 years that is going to be the worst of the persecution that has ever been on the face of the earth for 3.5 years. Verse 5, Paul says, remember you not that when I was yet with you, I told you about these things? Of course, he did back in the book of 1 Thessalonians. Excuse me. But he says, you know what withholds that he might reveal in his time. So he said, Yahweh is still holding back his wrath. He's still not doing anything yet, allowing things to turn out the way they're going to do it. And we can see the things that are going to be taking place. But he will not intervene right away, but he will in due time. But notice in verse 7, he says, the mystery of iniquity does already work. Only he who now lets, or who will tolerate it, will let until he be taken out of the way. Some people say that actually is the Holy Spirit, that the Holy Spirit will be taken out of the way. I don't really believe that's really what it means. But we do know that Yahweh is allowing this world to do the things that the worldly people want to do. He is really working with the called out ones. Those are the ones he's working with. The world goes on. The world does its thing. And Yahweh's in control. He knows what will have to be stopped a little later. But right now, he is calling out a people for his name. Now notice in verse 8 it says, and then shall that wicked one, it should be, that wicked one be revealed, whom Yahshua shall consume with the spirit of his mouth, and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming. So again, he's talking about the adversary, Satan, isn't he? Yahshua is going to destroy him when he returns with the brightness of his coming. Even him whose coming is after the working of Satan. Now notice here it says, with all powers and signs and lying wonders. Thank you. Now again, he talks about deceivableness of the unrighteousness. Excuse me. So we know that this is happening. But again, notice how Yahweh always tells the end from the beginning. He tells us right here that Satan's going to be destroyed no matter what goes on. And we know that that's coming. And it's going to come when Yahshua returns. But now to move on to verse 10, it says, he comes here with all deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish. So he deceives those that are don't want to obey Yahweh, don't want to keep his word. And he deceives these people. And they don't love the truth. Then they don't want to be saved, because if you love the truth, you'll follow it. You'll read it and follow it, apply it to your life. And for this cause, Yahweh shall send them strong delusion that they should believe the lie, that they might all be damned who believe not the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. But he tells us before we even get down this far that Satan is going to be destroyed. Yahshua is going to destroy him when he returns. But he tells us ahead of time so that we know that we don't have to put up with Satan forever, that there's a time coming when he will be destroyed. And then in verse 13, he clears this up and says, now because of all this, we have to give thanks to our Heavenly Father, because he has from the beginning chosen you to salvation through the sanctification of the Spirit and the belief of his truth. Well, I want to go back to something else again, over to in the book of John, chapter 8, continuing here with the problem we have here with Satan being a spirit being. Notice here in chapter 8 that he is given the title Father. A lot of people are not familiar with the Hebrew, you might call it a Hebraism. When something has a beginning, why often the Bible, Hebrews, call it the father of this, the father of that. here in John chapter 8, notice in verse 41, he accuses the people here of doing the deeds of their father, doing the wrong things. And he says, then they said to him, we were not born of fornication. We have one father, even Elohim or Yahweh. Notice what they're calling Yahshua. He said, they say he's born of fornication because they knew that Joseph was not his father. Well, then verse 42, Yahshua doesn't argue with him. He moves on and says, if Elohim were your father, you would love me, for I proceeded forth and came from Elohim. Neither came I of myself, but he sent me. Why do you not understand my speech, even because you cannot hear my word? They got their mind made up. They don't want to listen to what he says anyway. So in verse 44, he says, you are of your father, the devil, and the lust of your father you will do. He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks of his own, for he's a liar and the father of it. So he is the father of the lie. And he's also the one that told the first lie. Let's go back to Genesis chapter 3 again and take a quick look at this. Because this lie has been perpetuated down through history. It's with us even today. We have people that believe in an immortal soul. And here Yahshua said that he is the father of the first lie. So here in chapter 3, the beast of the field, the best one, the serpent, comes to the woman and says, notice how he puts it. He doesn't say, ask a direct question. He says, probably looked at the fruit and said, like in verse 1, hath Elohim said, you shall not eat of every tree in the garden? Isn't it true you're not supposed to eat any of this beautiful fruit that's around here? Look at it all. It's all beautiful. And you're not able to eat of it. Isn't that right? Verse 2, she says, we may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the tree of the knowledge in the midst of the garden, Yahweh has said, you shall not eat of it, neither shall you touch it, lest you die. I don't find that he said she couldn't touch it, but anyway, that's what she says. But the one in the midst of the garden is one that they were not to eat of. And notice how the serpent says unto the woman in verse 4, you really won't die, for Elohim knows that in the day that you eat thereof, your eyes will be opened, and you will know the difference. You shall be as mighty ones, as deities yourself. You'll know good and evil. So the woman looks at the tree, and of course found the tree had beautiful fruit. So she took one and gave it also to her husband, and he ate it. But this is the first lie. And this is the lie that Satan tells Eve. You're not going to die. You have an immortal soul. Oh, your body might die, but you're going to live forever. And so this is the problem, you see, the first lie. And the one that Satan wanted to believe, because he himself someday is going to be destroyed and going to be annihilated. So here's the first lie, and we find that today. In fact, Elder Ron sent an article about the Gnosticism and how it's still alive and working hard today. People believe that they have an immortal soul if they die, and they confuse spirit and soul. Spirit is different than soul. Spirit, you see, in Yahshua, when he died, it says he gave up the spirit. And we find that when people die, it says the spirit goes back to Yahweh who gave it. Well, that word spirit, of course, in the Hebrew is ruach. It means breath, wind, blast of air. And the breath of life goes back to Yahweh. He gave it. But I do think it's probably more than that. I think it's probably some record that he has of all the people. And in his perfect memory, he knows exactly who did what and what their reward is going to be, and a lot about them, because he does keep a record of them, and the scripture talks about the spirit going back to Yahweh who gave it. And it could well be he has an automatic memory that You put it in his memory bank and it's there as long as he wants it. So here we find Yahshua telling the people that didn't believe him that Satan was the father of lies, and he committed the first lie. I want you to turn with me to Revelation chapter 12. Here we have the assembly in the book of Revelation. We have the woman that actually called in chapter 12. And notice here, in the Revelation 12, verse 1, it says, "And there appeared a great wonder in the heavens, a woman clothed with the sun, and the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of 12 stars. And she, being with child, cried, travailing in birth, and pain to be delivered. And there appeared another wonder in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon, having 7 heads, and 10 horns, and 7 crowns upon his head. And his tail drew the third part of the stars of heaven, and did cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman, which was ready to be delivered, for to devour her child as soon as it was born. And she brought forth a man-child who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron. And her child was caught up to Elohim and to his throne. And the woman fled into the wilderness, where she has a place prepared by Yahweh, that they should feed her there 1,260 days. And there was a war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought, and they fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought and his angels. And they prevailed not, neither was their place found any more in the heavens. And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. And he was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him." And you might think, well, that still doesn't say he died. Well, this is discussing, of course, the end of the age, when there's going to be a battle, where Satan knows that his time is short. He has as little time to work, and so he works as best he can, doing everything, pulls out all the stops, trying to hold on to what he knows he cannot have. Let's turn over to the book of Revelation in chapter 20, now that we're there. And in chapter 20, we have here, of course, the blessing that is given to those who are faithful. We find that, number one, that, let's move on down to verse 4. John said, "I saw thrones." Chapter 20 and verse 4. "I saw thrones, and they sat upon them, and judgment was given unto them." So, here we have the judgment going on. "I saw the souls of them that were beheaded for the witness of Yahshua Messiah, for the word of Elohim, which had not worshipped the beast, neither his image, neither had received his mark upon their foreheads, nor in their hands. And they lived and reigned with the Messiah 1,000 years. So here it's talking about the saints, what's in store for us if we're faithful. In verse 6, he says, "Blessed and holy is he that is part in the first resurrection." In fact, hold your thumb here and just take a quick look over in chapter 21 and notice verse 7. It says, "He that overcometh shall inherit all things, and I will be his mighty one, and he shall be my son." So he's talking about the overcomers. So when you overcome and are in that first resurrection, whatever Yahshua inherits, you also inherit. And that's the blessing here in verse 6. If you have part in that first resurrection, it says, "On such the second death has no power, but they shall be priests of Elohim and Messiah, reign with him 1,000 years. Now in verse 7, it talks about when the 1,000 years are over. Everybody's been living under the Messiah now for 1,000 years. He's putting down all rule. He's getting the people to understand that the blessings are there when you're able to follow in the footsteps of what Yahshua is doing. And then we find that when that happens, then in verse 7, when the 1,000 years are expired, Satan shall be loosed out of his prison. Now, what most people miss is that you have to keep in mind verse 5. So when Satan is left out of his prison, in verse 5 it says, the rest of the dead live not again till the 1,000 years were finished. Well, in verse 7 it says the 1,000 years are finished, so the rest of the dead that didn't come up in the first resurrection will be made alive. Now, they're going to be made alive not to become spirit beings, but they will be flesh and blood. That's the second resurrection. And that's why you want to be in the first resurrection, because verse 6 says that you will be able to be kings and priests, and the death, second death, has no power on those in the first resurrection, because they're made spirit beings, and they will not be hurt by the second death, because it doesn't affect them. My point is this. Verse 7 says, when the 1,000 years are expired, Satan shall be loosed out of the prison and shall go out to deceive the nations which are in the four quarters of the earth, Gog and Magog, together with them to battle, and the number of whom is as the sand of the sea. Those that are joining with Satan now are not the saints, but they are the ones that are brought up in the second resurrection. They're flesh and blood, flesh and bone. And you find in verse 9 it says, he went up and on the breadth of the earth and compassed the camp of the saints about the beloved city, that's New Jerusalem, and fire came down from Yahweh out of heaven and devoured them. You'll notice that there's no battle taking place. Nothing has happened, because the saints, you see, the camp of the saints, are not hurt by this fire that comes down. But it does take care of the ones that are joining up with Satan to attack the camp of the saints. Notice here it says in verse 10 that the devil that deceived them, now it's his turn to get judgment, and it says he was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophet, the Bible says are, but it really should be were cast, because that's what happened to them. They were cast into the lake of fire. And it says here that they shall be tormented day and night forever and ever. Well, that word torment is actually basanzio, and it means to test or examine. And it says they'll be reviewed. We'll come back to that a little bit later. But the point we want to make here is that some people think that when you're living under Yahshua for 1,000 years and then Satan is let loose, that all these people are going to go back and obey Satan. But that isn't what happens. It's those that come up in the second resurrection, flesh and blood human beings, that obey and follow Satan and his plan. I want to take you over here to, let's go to Malachi chapter 4. I want to pursue this thing primarily on Satan and the fact that he will be destroyed. But over in the book of Malachi, a couple of verses here we want to take a look at, because it kind of gives an idea of what's going to happen at the end of the age. And we know that in Malachi chapter 4, in verse 1, it says, behold, the day comes that shall burn as an oven, and all the proud, yea, all that do wickedly, shall be stubble. And the day that comes shall burn them up, says Yahweh of hosts. It shall leave neither root nor branch. We just read that in Revelation, where the fire comes down and burns these people up who rebelled against Yahweh, and he burns them up. But in verse 2 he says, those that fear my name shall the Son of Righteousness, that's speaking of Yahshua, arise with healing in his wings. And you shall go forth and grow up as calves in the stall. And you shall tread down the wicked, for they shall be ashes under the soles of your feet. These are the wicked that were destroyed back in the book of Revelation. They shall be ashes under your feet. In other words, they'll be no more alive walking around, but they'll actually be turned into ashes. And he says, in that day I shall do this. And then he says, remember, Remember my law. Remember the law of Moses, my servant, who I commanded unto you in Horeb for all Israel with the statutes and judgments. And then it's a reminder for the end of the age that there's going to come Eliah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of Yahweh. And he will turn the hearts of the fathers to the children and the hearts of the children to the fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. Kind of interesting, I've always thought that the Jewish Tanakh changes the last two verses around because he didn't want to end the Old Testament with a curse. But that's what verse 6 says. So you read the Tanakh and verse 5 would be verse 6 and verse 6 would be verse 5. Maybe it's a little more heartening to people to find out that Yahweh does have good news for all of us at the end of the age. I want you to turn now with me, if you will, to Matthew chapter 8. And here Yahshua is talking to the brethren. And in the 8th chapter here, I went too far. In verse 28, what happened so far? Yahshua stilled the winds and the storm subsided, and they were all safe in the boat. The ship was okay. So then in verse 28, when he was come to the other side of the country in the boat there, there the Gergesenes there met him, and two possessed with demons coming out of the tombs. By the way, this Gergesenes in Luke is called the Gadarenes, and sometimes people wonder why this town is called two different names. Well, actually, you look in the history books and you find out that these were two little cities, and they were very close together. And they were there by the shore, of course, where the boat was, and they were kind of trading centers and fishing supplies and so on. And so Luke wrote from coming one direction and Matthew wrote from the other. So these two towns are used interchangeably, but it's in the same area, and it doesn't change anything at all. But if you get somebody who wants to criticize the Bible, they'll say, well, no one can agree on which town this is. Luke says one thing, Matthew says the other. Well, it really doesn't make any difference because there are two towns there and they're not very far apart, real close together. Okay, here we have these two possessed with demons coming out of the tombs, exceedingly fierce, so that no man might pass by the way. And behold, they cried out, saying, what have you to do with us, Yahshua, thou son of Elohim? Are you come hither to torment us before the time? This is an interesting verse when you stop and consider it a little bit. In the first place, the two people here that come out of the tombs, I didn't know people actually lived among the tombs, but when I was in the Philippines, we went to visit a tomb of one of the patriarchs of the church, I guess you might say, and all the fancy monuments they have there. And there was a man that came running out of the tombs. He was almost naked, but barefooted and running around and yelling and screaming and so on, and they couldn't get rid of him. Finally, we left there after we'd viewed the tombstones and everything. But he lived there, and he stayed there, and that was where he hung around, and people brought food to him because they thought they were feeding the deities or the gods or something there. I didn't understand why. Anyway, we have the same thing going on here. But interestingly enough, the question is, what have we to do with thee, thou son of Elohim? Did you come hither to torment us before the time? The word hither means, why did you come way over here? What are you doing in this part of the country, in this part of the world? Apparently, where Yahshua is now, there are no believers. And this is you might say, a heathen place, or a place where those who are ignorant of Yahweh's word. And he comes over there to be with people that are all steeped in paganism. And these demonic possessed people speak and they say, did you come here to torment us before our time? Some scholars have looked at this and they've said, well, before the time what? Well, they said they must mean before the time that they're going to be destroyed, along with Satan. But is there something even worse than that by torment? Are they going to be tormented before they're killed? Well, that's an interesting question. I don't have the answers for that, but it does look like an interesting one. But in the reading this, you'll notice a good way off, there was a herd of swine feeding. And, of course, a true Israelite wouldn't keep swine, would he? What will you do with a bunch of pigs? So here we find that the demons besought him, asked Yahshua, saying, if you cast us out, allow us to go away into that herd of swine. And Yahshua simply says, go. So you can see here, he already has control over these spirit beings, the ones that are doing the demonic spirits, the little ones. And someday he will, of course, take care of the satanic being as well, satanic, I should say. But notice that they went into the herd of swine, and behold, the whole herd of swine ran violently down a steep place into the sea, and they perished in the waters. Whether these demonic spirits left those hogs or not, we don't know. But it's interesting that he talks about this, and they ask the question, are you going to torture us before the time? And all he says is go, and they've disappeared. So here we have Yahshua in control of these demonic spirits, and we find that in the Bible, that even when you go over to the book of Ezekiel, if you want to go over there to chapter 28, you'll find there we have the demonic spirits again. In fact, this one is actually referred to as a cherub. I don't want to spend a lot of time with this, but in looking this over, the reason I wanted to point it out, because some Bibles and some teachers feel that this king of Tyre is actually Satan himself. I question that because it sounds like it, but I think it was one of his demonic spirits that's working with him. Notice here, we're in chapter 28 of Ezekiel and verse 12. It says, son of man, take up a lamentation upon the king of Tyre, and say unto him, thus says Yahweh Elohim, you sealed up the sum full of wisdom, perfect in beauty. You have been in Eden, in the garden of Elohim. Every precious stone was your covering. And he goes on and names them all. So it's beautiful. And he says that the workmanship of your tabourets and of the pipes was prepared in the day that you were created. So here we have a cherub that was created. You are the anointed cherub that covers, and I have set thee, and thou wast upon the holy mountain of Elohim, and you have walked up and down in the midst of the stones of fire. You was perfect in the day from which you were created, till iniquity was found in you. So actually, this is sounds very much like it could be this satanic devil, but it's called a cherub. And it certainly sounds more like him. But notice in verse 16, by the multitude of thy merchandise, they have filled the midst of thee with violence, and you have sinned. Therefore I will cast thee as profane out of the mountain of Elohim, and I will destroy thee, O covering cherub, from the midst of the stones of fire. And he goes on to talk about in verse 17 how your heart was lifted up because of your beauty. You have corrupted thy wisdom, reason of thy brightness. I will cast thee to the ground. I will lay thee before kings that they may behold you there. You have defiled thy sanctuaries by the multitude of your iniquities, by the iniquity of your traffic. Therefore I will bring forth fire from the midst of thee. I shall devour thee. And I will bring the ashes upon the earth. I'll bring you to ashes on the earth. in the sight of all them that behold you. And they that know thee among the people shall be astonished at you. Thou shalt be a terror. Thou shalt be a terror, and never shalt thou be any more. So this, my point is, I'm not trying to discuss what, if this actually is Satan or one of his cherubs. My point is that spirit beings can be destroyed and done away. So here we have the promise that is made to the satanic hordes. I think what Yahweh is doing, he's working on this earth, calling out a people now that will help to be the rulers in the kingdom, help put down all rebellion, all lawlessness. And when that's finally done, he'll have the second resurrection. But I do think that before that comes, at the end of this age, we're really going to be put to the test to find out whether we're going to stand fast. Because we find that many people are going to be followers of the saints, trying to do what we're doing and follow us. But when the chips are down, well, let's turn over to the book of Daniel. I think I've been there before, but let's take a look at it again. In the book of Daniel, you find that there are a lot of people that are going to be following the saints and want to take advantage of the things that they're able to do and help them. Because if I understand the Bible right, at the end of the age, the saints are going to be able to do a lot of the things, a lot of the miracles that the Bible talks about. And at that time, there will be people that will follow with them, with us, and try to do what we're doing and take advantage of what's going on. If you want to turn to the 11th chapter of Daniel, and this is talking about the end of the age, but I just want to point out that in verse 31, it talks about the abomination that makes desolate. And the man of sin pollutes the sanctuary of strength and so on. But notice verse 32. And such as do wickedly against the covenant. That means against Yahweh's will, against Yahweh's covenant, shall he corrupt by flatteries. The man of sin is going to corrupt those that do wickedly and don't obey Yahweh. And then it says, but the people that do know their mighty one shall be strong and do exploits. See, in the second chapter of Acts, when you read that, the people said that the disciples, the apostles, were drunk. And Peter said, no, it's only the third hour of the morning. How can that happen? And then he talked about the pouring out of Yahweh's Spirit at the end of the age. He said, this is the preliminary pouring out of the Spirit. And they didn't really do a lot of miracles there, except that at the end of the age, it appears that there will be miracles being performed by Yahweh's people, because the apostles were able to perform miracles when all this happened. So here we find that when it says in verse 32, they shall be strong and do exploits. And then it says, they that understand among the people shall instruct many, yet they shall fall by the sword, by flame, captivity, and so on, many days. And in verse 34 is one I wanted to bring to your attention. It says, now when they shall fall, they shall be helped with a little help. But many shall cling to them with flatteries. So we find there's going to be some that want to take advantage of this. You know how it is when for example, somebody gets to be crowned champion boxer or something. Boy, he has friends that just stand up and want to follow him. Of course, what they're following him for is whatever he can do for them, whatever kind of goodies they can get from him. And it's going to be the same way at the end of the age. There's going to be a lot of people that will want to join in, but they have not had the depth of understanding to stand fast when the real pressure comes on. And that's what we have to watch out for, because we're to be studying, learning, getting a depth of understanding that will not leave us. In fact, it'll be stronger than ever at the end of the age. Well, actually, rather than go into some more of the prophecies, we'll leave that for next time. But I do think we understand that We may be tempted by Satan. We may have him trying to turn us away from the truth. He's going to continue to try it as long as he can. But if we stand fast and keep our thoughts and nose in the Bible, then we'll be able to withstand anything that he can throw at us.